Straight Talk About Vision Loss with Mark Riccobono.
The National Federation of the Blind has done a lot of work this year on access to education, access to information in books, and really protecting access for blind people across the country, with libraries and schools adopting e-book readers that are not accessible, and utilizing publishing content that's not accessible. It's a fairly complex set of issues, and frankly, e-books, which are now being adopted widely by people who are not blind, have been used for decades by blind people. It's a history that many people don't know, so I thought it would be great to celebrate our success with access to e-books this year by talking to the father of the e-book. George Kircher is the Secretary General for the DAISY Consortium and also the President for the International Digital Publishing Forum. He innovated the first e-book when he was in graduate school in the 1980s. And we can really credit George as the father of e-books as we know it, e-books as we've been using them as blind people for many years now, and now are coming into the mainstream. Still a lot of work to be done and a lot of access to be protected for people with print disabilities, but we can celebrate as we close 2011 that we have greater access to information than ever before, and George Kircher is a big part of that, so I'm looking forward to it. Let's go talk with George Kircher. Okay, we're here with George Kircher. George, welcome to Straight Talk.
Well, thank you for having me here. This is great.
So, George, it really is a pleasure to have you here. You and I have been working together over the past year on the Accessible Instructional Materials Commission. But you have a much longer history with e-books before 2010, 2011. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit first. So let's go back to the 1980s and tell me what you were doing then and kind of how you came about the thinking up the idea of e-books.
So I was a graduate student in computer science. I left my job teaching and went back for a master's in computer science at the University of Montana. Mm-hmm. And at the graduate level, there wasn't any books. Surprise. something we knew about. And I ended up just getting the idea of writing the publisher and asking them for the stuff that drove their printing presses. Mm-hmm. And I said it's just for my own use, and I got these files, one on DBase, one on WordPerfect, and one on Lotus. Mm. Old software applications. I wanted the documentation, and these were three books. The publisher sent me the files. They said just for my use, mm-hmm. and I opened the files, and they just looked like garbage.
Yeah.
It was in the middle of the semester, and then end of 87 over Christmas break. I sat down, took a look at them, and wrote software to convert them to the first digital book. And I did the conversion, figured out what the codes in the files meant, just at, kind of trial and error, and started to read it just in a text editor. And I'm having this book read to me by my computer, mm-hmm. with a screen reader. I was like, oh, my God, this is absolutely, absolutely incredible. And I started to tell people about it, and the one thing led to another. And at the University of Montana, they helped me incubate it, but I started essentially a nonprofit, mm-hmm. called Computerized Books for the Blind, mm-hmm. and I added the word print disabled to that name, and actually coined the term print disabled, yeah. with the naming of the company,
right.
which is certainly taken off worldwide. It's used everywhere now. And what I intended to do was increase the market size.
Yeah.
But I did start this as a nonprofit, and was distributing books by the summer of 1988.
So you were getting books from publishers and basically converting them. Was that
typesetting was the thing back then?
Yeah.
And so I was getting typesetting files that were driving the printing presses. And you could pretty effectively write software that could convert these materials. The next few years, desktop publishing came out, and it got away from typesetting, and the desktop publishing files, PageMaker and what have you, were much, much more complex to convert than the more markup-oriented the file. So it got harder over time. But yeah, started off by the conversion of publisher files, and always and still think that that's the right way to go. You want to follow upstream to the source of the content, follow the content to its source, and from that point you got to make it accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Like with so many great innovations, starts with someone that has a need to do something.
Right.
So where did you take it from there? I mean, tell us all about the evolution and growing into Daisy and that sort of thing.
Oh boy. Had this little company for several years, and I never drew a paycheck.
Yeah.
And recording for the blind. Became interested in what I was doing, and I ended up merging with RFB, and that happened in 91, and I got my first paycheck, and my wife was very happy, and so I'm still with Recording for the Blind, and then it became Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, and now Learning Ally, so. Still with the same company, and fortunately, they, I said I'm really interested in standards technology. Mm-hmm. When I joined them, I said this has the potential to put this company out of business. That there won't be a need for a library for the blind and print disabled if we're successful.
Right.
And I got every manager in the room, all the vice presidents that were interviewing and talking about the merger of the companies, to agree that if that happens, great. That's fabulous. We accept that, and that's, I wouldn't have merged unless they had answered in that way.
Right.
We continued with eText distribution that complemented the Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic collection. So these were things that still on tape. And you couldn't do anything with reference books on tape. I mean, it was just worthless to have a dictionary or encyclopedia or anything complicated. So they put me to work making all the reference works. So we did Webster's Dictionary, Stedman's Medical Dictionary, Black's Law Dictionary, a lot of software documentation and reference materials. And it was all, one-off type things, one book from here, one book from there. And I, they wanted to round out their library collection like library, libraries do.
Right.
And but when we got some West publishing titles, and West, of course, was Lexis and Nexis,
right?
And they were all into taking their books and putting them up online. So conversion of West titles was trivial.
Yeah.
Wrote one program, convert everything in their collection. I said, "Wow, we could convert all of West Publishing's materials. Just get the files. We could have them all available." But they, the decision was made to pick and choose which ones we wanted to do.
Right.
It was also in about that time that the Chafee Amendment happened, so we didn't have to ask publishers. And that was a two-sided sword, because asking publishers for permission also gave us the opportunity to ask them for the files.
Right.
And after Chafee came around, they, you could scan and do things and create e-text in that way. And I think that there is still, you know, there's still great, great value in going to the source for the content. Mm-hmm. And it was in 97 when DAISY posted, the DAISY Consortium was formed in 96, and in 97 they were talking about what they wanted to do and hiring a project manager. And I went to a meeting and said, you know, we, you know, if DAISY is going to move forward, we're going to have to integrate with existing standards. We're going to have to get out of proprietary, which the first DAISY 1 was proprietary. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, everybody there was singing the same tune. Yes, standards, HTML, focusing on that. Mm-hmm. And so within a couple months, I was hired by the DAISY Consortium, and I continue to work for the DAISY Consortium as the Secretary General now. And it's just been a great experience. And so DAISY has a contract with Learning Ally for 75% of my time, and mm-hmm. and I'm assigned to work on a whole variety of different standards.
So let's follow the DAISY thread a little bit, because I think many people may know the concept of DAISY. They certainly have heard of DAISY if they're using any of the variety of books that are available. So the DAISY Consortium worked on establishing a standard and developing that standard over time.
Right.
And really, that standard it was ahead of its time in many ways, because in 2011, when people are talking more and more about e-books, the DAISY standard really has the elements that the mainstream e-books have been slow to adopt, which is navigation and
right.
simple navigation. So DAISY starts out in 97, and was it clear that that was going to be a successful path, or was it a hard road to stay on?
The libraries around the world serving people who are blind and print disabled mm-hmm. make up the DAISY Consortium. And at that time, there was an imperative. We just had to do something about replacing the analog cassette mm-hmm. because that was just going away mm-hmm. really fast. And so everybody knew they had to make a change. So the focus first was on finding something that's going to replace the analog cassette. At
right.
the same time, the European Blind Union put together a set of requirements, things like, oh, we want to be able to spell a word. We want to be able to search. We want to be able to go to a page mm-hmm. in a book, and we want to navigate by heading. So all these requirements came out, and the only way to do this, search and spell words, is if you've got the text
right.
and this rich human audio narration heritage. So we had to marry the two together, and mm-hmm. we used W3C standards, synchronized multimedia integration language, and I participated in the development of that standard at W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium that sets the standards for HTML and other internet technologies. And and we developed this other thing called a navigation center, which is kind of like laying on top of a book it's a table of contents on steroids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the DAISY navigation model became famous. Everybody loved it. Oh, my God, I can go to a page, and kids with textbooks. And most of the DAISY books were audio and navigation.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them were converted from analog cassette collections. And we've still got a lot of those materials around today. So it's audio plus navigation. But the ideal was text and audio synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now text-to-speech engines have gotten a whole lot better in the quality of text-to-speech. is much, much better. And many people are saying, okay, we got the navigation plus the text of the document, and we can use our onboard text-to-speech to read the document. We don't need the recorded MP3 that's synchronized with it. So many, Bookshare, for example, that's their model, but they're using DAISY books.
Mm-hmm.
Library of Congress is DAISY, mm-hmm. and Learning Ally is DAISY as well, although those organizations marketed under their own names.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So the right. DAISY brand recognition in the United States is actually less than it is in other parts of the world.
It's interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
So 2011, here we are, but we still have a specialized standard, or do we?
I would say that we're getting very close to having a single worldwide standard for both the commercial and the mainstream. The DAISY Consortium joined the International Digital Publishing Forum, mm-hmm. when it was started back in 1999, and participated in the developments of those specifications. And we have worked on that, and now we're moving to the third generation of that specification, called EPUB 3. And it has incorporated all of the features that are great from the DAISY navigation, the what we call media overlays, mm-hmm. in EPUB 3, which is text-audio synchronization. It supports MathML, which is absolutely essential, mm-hmm. for any kind of science, engineering, technology, and math work, and is using HTML5, which is going to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, HTML5 is growing by leaps and bounds, and HTML5 is absolutely going to be everywhere. And it's going to be used for the web, and it's going to be used for books as well. So the EPUB standard is going to be adopted by the DAISY Consortium.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do is help the DAISY membership move over time into this format. And we always guaranteed, you know, there are libraries, and we've guaranteed that if you adopt the DAISY standard, you'll be able to move that forward, mm-hmm. in time. Your collection will be durable and move forward in time. So we will move, we will write software using the DAISY Pipeline 2 implementation that will transform older DAISY content, DAISY 202, DAISY 3, into the new EPUB standard, and have a single worldwide standard. And one of my sayings is, one standard is always better than two.
Absolutely.
And so that is strategically, that's where we've gone.
So I think the technical sometimes can bog people down, but I think it's really important. So Christmas Vacation, 1987, just,
yep.
trying to get through graduate school.
Right.
To Christmas 2011, it's a standard that is really on the brink of being the standard for every reader, every publisher in the world. How does that feel?
Oh, man. we can solve this problem.
Yeah.
You know, we can get that. There's going to be a lot to do. The reading systems that are out there, a lot of them are not accessible. And, of course, the National Federation of the Blind is instrumental in making people aware of that. And sometimes with a very heavy stick, and that's great. I think everybody knows now that these reading systems must be accessible, or they can't be used in our schools or, mm-hmm. in our libraries. But we're looking forward to a rich, rich reading experience that blind person can have right alongside the sighted person, and we want to be able to read absolutely everything.
So, great point. So When the National Federation of the Blind talks about the Kindle or the Nook, we're not talking about the standard that you've been discussing, in this case, EPUB 3. In that case, we're talking about the inaccessibility of what's sometimes referred to as the wrapper for that content. So the content comes in a format which might be accessible, but then it gets wrapped or ported into a book reading system that, for a variety of reasons, may or may not be accessible.
Right, right. And the reading systems, these companies have a responsibility to make their reading systems accessible. Mm-hmm. And the Apple folks, you know, you can read iBooks on your iPhone or your iPad with VoiceOver, mm-hmm. and it's accessible. That's the same content, same book, that is being provided to Barnes & Noble by the publisher and being put on a platform that, at this point in time, is not accessible.
Right.
And so there's a handshake that takes place between the content. The content, the actual ebook has to be accessible, but then the reading system that is presenting it to the person has to have accessibility, or you just can't get at the content.
So this is where the mainstream manufacturers right now really are the current key to accessibility, or a barrier to accessibility, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the people that are making I call them reading systems, EPUB reading systems, they need to make sure that people with disabilities can use these devices and products and provide a path for people to enjoy their product and the content that they should be able to commercially buy.
So reflecting, we're 20 years now past when you sat there with the guys at RFB and they all agreed that someday this was going to potentially blow up their business model. And here it is 20 years later. Do you think they really believed you, or do you think they thought, well, this will be far enough down the line, won't be my problem?
I at that time, text-to-speech was so bad,
yeah,
that most people wouldn't tolerate it. You wouldn't want to read a whole book with the text-to-speech from 1991.
Right.
I mean, blind people do it all the time, and we're doing it at that time. But in terms of the other people that are being served, the learning disabled population, the dyslexic person, there was a feeling that people just wouldn't tolerate that quality of text-to-speech.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, today, whoa, man, text-to-speech is getting so good.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have a hard time telling, okay, is that a person or is that a machine talking? And so, I'm not very good at predicting times. I thought we were going to be where we are today about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Things have happened slower than I thought. So I'm pretty good at predicting what's going to happen, but I'm not good at predicting when it's going to happen.
So you're surprised that it's taken this long. Why do you think it's taken this long to get to where we are?
Well, I think PDF, I hate PDF. I can't stand it. But it breathed life into the publishing industry and gave them a mechanism to take digital files and push them out to people and have a pseudo digital reading experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about PDF is that it does not reflow. You can't put it on a different size screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so the revolution that has come from the computer screen to the tablet or iPad and even the phone, everybody wants to have the information reflow,
mm-hmm.
and be able to be seen on whatever device they use. And that feature is something that has been a great friend to people who are blind, mm-hmm. because you've got to have the correct reading order. PDF, you don't know how it's going to come out on the page. You don't know what the reading order is. But when you produce the ebook, if you put it on different devices, the publishers know it's got to reflow, it's got to look good, correct reading order. And that single item has been the greatest friend to our efforts in bringing accessibility into mainstream publishing.
What's been the biggest surprise that you've had in this 24-year journey?
I guess the biggest surprise that came was 2 years ago when I was elected president of the International Digital Publishing Forum. I was actually shocked that, you know, this is a mainstream commercial trade organization and they elected a blind guy to be president. I mean, it did shock me. I was shocked. And Daisy has put a lot of resources into development of the EPUB standard. So we have the best people in the world in the disability community working on the EPUB standard. And Marcus Gilling, who is our chief technology officer for Daisy, was leading the EPUB 3 developments. And now he has been hired half-time as the CTO for the International Digital Publishing Forum and is still half-time CTO for Daisy. So you see this convergence and merging of disability with the mainstream publishing. And quite frankly, a lot of this stuff is what was defined way back when by the European Blind Union in their list of requirements for e-books. The visual presentation and the visual beauty of printed pages is what we're trying to do for the mainstream market. And that's fabulous. That's great. Make it look as great as anybody wants, just as long as it's also going to be great when you listen to it with text-to-speech, great when you have your refreshable Braille device attached to it, and great when you magnify those fonts so that you can see it with for the low vision folks. You know, but you've got to have those three types of accessibility available, or that reading system is not accessible. It's got to have all three.
Right. So, great case study for why it's important to come together to try to figure out what problems we need to solve and figure out our collective experience, what should be in solving those problems. So, some blind people get together in Europe and they list out the things that really would be important to them, and here it is becoming really part of the mainstream. So it's a great case study for why collective action and discussing our hopes and dreams for the future are important.
And it's a great example of how the blind are leading the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what do you see as next? I mean, now you're in the mainstream. What can you do next?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a lot of threats to the EPUB standard. We got to make sure it is adopted and used worldwide in every market. And there's great support for Asian languages in the EPUB 3 standard. We've got to make sure that it's used in those markets. It's got to come into the developing countries and so many people who need this technology. The reading systems need to be integrated into everything. You know, we think the mobile market is where the greatest access for developing countries is going to come. And we still have a long way to go with math, science, engineering, all those technologies that are not text, that are, and we can use math markup, and but we have to have reading systems that are presenting that information well. And, you know, just about the time we solve all these problems with access to text, more and more of the content is going to be visually oriented with diagrams and pictures and video and canvas with animations. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to stay on top of all of those things and evolve the accessibility in those areas as well. So the publishing industry has to be comprehensively accessible, mm-hmm. not just to the text, but to everything, all aspects of the information that's presented in the book or publication, anything that's published. And of course, if it's content that is smaller in content, just web pages, those web pages, of course, need to be accessible. But all that published information moving forward just needs to be fully accessible.
So a lot more work to be done, a lot more opportunities.
There's a lot of opportunities. Yeah. There's great room for innovation. We need the young people coming up with disabilities to get involved with these things. Boy, if I was a student right now in a technical field, I'd have my nose into the EPUB 3 specification. I'd be learning all about it because there's a great future there for a lot of people.
The wonderful opportunity is that the graduate students who are sitting in their rooms over this holiday break don't have to worry about where to find accessible content, because it's not perfect, but it's certainly there's a whole pile of it where there was, well, none. But as you say, now we need people to think about the next place to go to keep moving the ball down the field.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you look at some of the collections out now. Hathi Trust, the Internet Archive, mm-hmm. the Google Book Project, and all of those are in EPUB 3, or EPUB and moving to EPUB 3.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that your time, George. I had to say, the holiday time is always a time to be thankful, and I'm thankful that you helped yourself out in 1987, because it means that we have a lot of great content available today. And having been through school kind of in the bridge time, when they were still certainly still using cassettes, but later getting into a graduate program in more recent time when a lot of this text is available, it makes a tremendous difference. And really, we owe you a lot of thanks for your own commitment to this topic and putting your own innovation into it, and to really being a champion for mainstream access. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been one heck of a ride.
All right.
The ride is still going.
That's right. Well, we look forward to working on future efforts with you. Thanks for being on the show. That's Straight Talk about mainstream access to books.
www.nfb.org 410-659-9314